You gotta love it. I just bit my tongue. Not on purpose. I wasn't about to say anything bad. I just was chewing and bit my tongue. So that's going to feel good later on. Welcome to Woods and Water, South Carolina. This today is about you, the listener. Scott Laseth, Laseth, the sporting chef, will be joining us about 3:15 from California. He has a show on the Sportsman Channel. His website's The Sporting Chef. He's got a couple books out there. He is the man to go to about wild game cooking, whether it's ducks, fish, shrimp, venison, elk. I think he's even cooked an armadillo on a dare. So if you have any questions about cooking wild game, he's going to be live with us at 3:15. The number, and you can text if you're not up to calling, or you can call if you want to talk to him in person. The number is 877-235-9405. Again, the number, if you want to talk, ask Scott Laseth a question about cooking wild game. The number is 877-235-9405. He's going to be with us from 3:15 till the end of the show, or however long we keep him going. And I've got some questions here that people have sent me already. So text line or phone line, either one, up to you. Would love to hear from you. I got a doozy of a question. I emailed him last night and he said, bring it on. So your best questions is he's ready for them. Scott's been doing this a long time, and it's not about making it more complicated. He'll tell you it's making it about tasting better. So that's today's show. There will not be a calendar of events today because it's going to be all talking about wild game. But if there were, it would always be brought to you by Visit Anderson Green Pine Landing and Event Center, who will be the host Lake Hartwell for the upcoming Bassmaster Classic. And actually next weekend will be the host. Visit Anderson is the host for the high school bass class. If you have a high school angler out there, he hasn't heard about it. And we've got people coming from Tennessee to this for this thing. So it's really grown since last January when we did our first one. We can still talk about registrations. You can get a hold of me or Neil Paul at Visit Anderson, and we can talk about registration and all that. It's going to be a great – I mean, we got Casey Ashley, Marty Robinson, Brian Latimer, Brandon Cobb. Geddes Brandon's going to be helping us out a little bit because on the digital media side, he's a pretty good guy. I haven't worked for Bass. I think we've even got a writer from Bass coming, and they may be sending a digital team to cover the whole event. Friday night dinner, t-shirt, goodie bag. Lonnie Stanley sent me a bunch of plastics last night. He did a bunch of pours and sent up a bunch of frogs and creature baits and all. So those kids are going to have a good time thanks to people like Lonnie, Zoom. Z-Man Fishing sent some stuff up for them. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, Garmin has sent an electronics unit. I can't remember which one it is. But, those kids are going to have a good time. So if you have a youngster who fishes on the high school or middle school circuit, and for some reason you haven't heard about it because they don't live in the listening area, hasn't been on Facebook, Instagram, whatever, get a hold of them. Then contact one of us. We'll see if we can't work in for a last minute registration, but that's going to be a good one. Many of you heard, if you kept up with politics, you know, and this is not East, but it's an issue. The president stole your land. That was the Facebook or the post on Patagonia's website after Trump reduced Bears Ear and Escalante. And a lot of people screamed hysteria. The sky is falling. This is land. You know, it's still federal land. It's still, anybody developing oil and gas or mineral interest have to still go through the federal permit process. There is some question about monument status, whether that makes it easier for the government to say you can't hunt fish on it, or whether being under BLM control like it was before President Obama put it into monument status, will make it easier for people to access. So, you know, you're talking about 1.3 million just on Bears Ears alone that Obama just said it's now federal, it's now monument. So there's a lot of going back and forth. And I ran across this article a long time ago looking at something, but you have to be careful on these companies. Know where your money's going. Vote with your dollars, because this is an article that says the top five shocking companies hurting you. And when I say you, I'm talking about the hunters, fishermen, you know, the public access people and all that, because they don't necessarily want everyone to have access to these areas, even though they make a big show of being for putting these areas off limits. So, like I said, this was in 2014. Take it for what it's worth. Do your own research, but vote with your dollars. Okay. Number one, REI. On the surface, seems like a great company, rewards program, good return policy, and they give back to the community. There's only one problem. Who they give back to? They don't donate to the Rocky Mountain Elk Federation, not the Oregon Hunters Association, not the U.S. Sportsman's Alliance. No. They support in part anti-sportsman's group directly and indirectly. The groups they support include Defenders of Wildlife, Oregon Wildlife. This I forgot to mention, this is written from the Oregon State standpoint. Klamath Siskiyou Wildlands, Portland Audubon Society, and Conservation Alliance, they have helped fund the reintroduction and expansion of the wolf in the lower 48, delayed sensible state-based wolf management through lawsuits, regularly blocked logging, and more. Number two on the list is Patagonia. By supporting Cascadia Wildlands, Predator Defense, Klamath Siskiyou Wildlands, and the Native Fish Society, Patagonia earns the number two spot in our anti-sportsman company directory. I've volunteered with other hunters that wear Patagonia and posed the question, why are you wearing that? The response is general, they make good clothes. While I can't deny that, once again, I have to ask, why would you support a company that finances organizations that are intent to eliminate or drastically reduce your ability to enjoy your way of life? I like this analogy. If your friend stole from you, would you still be friends with him? I guess most would answer with a resounding no. Companies supporting the previously mentioned organizations are essentially stealing from you. They're stealing from you, your children, your grandchildren by eliminating or reducing the ability to successfully hunt and fish. Then it says, and surprisingly, number four, and this article was written by Dominic Aiello and published on the Outdoor, something called the Outdoor Council, or OregonOutdoorCouncil.org. Number four is Gerber. You know, knife company, makes lots of hunting knives and makes a lot of money off sportsman's groups and all. But there again, they contribute to a lot of groups in Oregon that are intent on rolling back your ability to hunt and fish, at least in Oregon. And if they're doing it in Oregon, they'll do it here, although on a much smaller scale. But an attack on hunting is an attack on hunting, and a lot of the worst ones we have is internally. But we'll get to that in a later show. Oh, and here's a good one for you. The Muck Boot Company is an honorary number five on this list. So, again, do your research. Know what products you're buying. You know, I like this time of the year to buy local. But even when you buy local, you're buying products that they carry that are national manufacturers for the most part. So just know what you're doing. Know how your money is going to support causes you like and causes you don't. Maybe you don't like hunting and fishing. That's fine. Buy all the Patagonia you want to. But if you're a sportsman, you have to watch who you support, because you could be supporting your own demise. So that being said, who's in the Christmas spirit? Man, doesn't a little snow get you going? I mean, really. Love it in the South. Okay. Note from my engineer. Yeah, Christmas spirit, love it, but be careful. It's going to be 21 degrees out there tonight, especially in the upstate, and then you get a little warmer as you get down towards the coast, but a lot of ice buildup probably tonight. Be careful. you know, I had to get out with my Labrador. She is just, it doesn't matter what kind of weather, she has one thing on her mind, that ball. It doesn't matter what she's doing, the ball is like number one. Which is good, but had fun. I hope you got out there a little bit. It's, man, to get out there, it's so quiet when it's snowing and, kind of cold, but so be careful. Hope you're in the Christmas spirit. Gonna be a good show again. Scott Lysath is gonna be with us starting in the next segment. The text number 877-235-9405. The call in number is the same, 877-235-9405. Let's keep him busy. All right. With that, hang on through the break. We'll be back on the other side with more Woods and Water, South Carolina. Welcome to live radio. We're having a little problem with my intro music, so I just happen to, have a lot on my phone here. So welcome to next. Oh man, what was it my mom used to tell me? Necessity is the mother of invention. And there you have it. Invention right from the get go. I don't know what, Paul, you work on that music on your break. Okay. it is always a fun time when we get together, and I always appreciate him. I always appreciate him taking time out of his day. Actually, today you're probably, are you still on the couch, Scott?
Yeah. Well, not so much on the couch, but I'm not duck hunting. I know that.
tell us why you're still at home these days.
Well, I just had a total ankle replacement 3 weeks ago. So, ankle. Yes. So this is a long time sports injury. I ended up with an ankle that was just this arthritic, stiff, sore all the time joint. And they've come a long way with, artificial ankles now. So I've got, they put a plate on the bottom of your foot and shove some deal up your leg, and in between you've got a joint. And so, I'm not going to push it. I don't want to have to go back and do it again, so I'm going to take it easy for a little while.
I hear you. You be sure to do that. But that, and I'm sure cabin fever is probably there on the doorstep somewhere.
Killing me. First of all, normally I'm getting on a plane at least every week or every other week or going somewhere, and I'm going to be home for 2.5 months, which I know it doesn't seem like a long time to a lot of people, but I'm looking forward to it. I love being home. I just wish I could do something while I was here.
I hear you. Well, take just a minute, for those of you who haven't ever heard Scott before, tell us who you are, what you do, your show on Sportsman Channel, and your website.
I've got the show that's running on Sportsman Channel right now is called Dead Meat, and that is we're connecting with people who do things like muskrat trap and gigging for suckers in Missouri, and so we and they cook them and I eat them, and I don't eat a whole lot of some of them, but the Sporting Chef show is my anchor show. That's back on in January on Sportsman Channel.
Okay.
I'm cooking editor for Ducks Unlimited magazine, got a couple of cookbooks out myself. If you go to blog.winchester, I've got a weekly blog there.
Oh, wow.
So that's, you know, like I cook stuff. The easiest part about what I do on TV is that I don't have the challenge of having to shoot a big deer. I can just I can just cook a deer.
Yeah.
My part's easy.
Easy part. How long have you been doing this, Scott?
I started on HGTV in the late 90s. I've had my own show since 2001, somewhere in there. And, I had a restaurant a long time ago, and we would cook game there, and people would bring in their fishing game and we'd cook it for them. And so, many years ago, I did a cooking school for South Carolina Waterfowl.
Yes, you did.
And I still write for their magazines, and my son has been to camp there a couple times, and I'm a big fan of what they do with South Carolina Waterfowl.
Yeah. Camp Woody, when you get a bunch of kids jumping in a mud, and when you say mud puddle in South Carolina, that's usually the orange variety. Tugging
yes,
on a big
it
black inner tube, it's got to be fun.
I remember when I picked my kid up at camp, and he was dead asleep by the time we got to the end of the driveway. They wore him out. It was great.
That's a great camp. That's when you know they're having a good time.
Right.
Well, look, I appreciate you doing this again. We're going to jump right into it because I got a bunch of questions that people have sent me. And you brought up something. You editor for Ducks Unlimited magazine, so I'm sure nothing I throw at you today is going to be a surprise. Brining a duck. You know, the question
I don't
is,
cook. Go ahead.
No. Brining a duck. Why, do you brine a duck? What do you use to brine a duck? Take it off.
I don't cook a duck unless it's been brined. Now, there's another guy on my show, John McGannon. He's a big dry aging proponent. He says all brining does is dilute whatever's in there. Well, what it does do is it replaces whatever blood that's left in there with brine. The same thing you do with your Thanksgiving turkey, if you like to brine it, the results will be just as good with ducks. Now, I use a simple brine is a gallon of water to a cup of kosher or any other coarse salt. And I throw in a cup of brown sugar. And if you wanted to throw in some garlic powder and onion powder, that kind of thing, that's fine. But keep it 1 gallon of water to 1 cup of coarse salt. If all you have is a fine grind table salt, go with 3/4 of a cup. Otherwise, it'll be too salty. High Mountain Seasonings makes their gourmet, their game bird and poultry brine. It's even better. What it does, it has a little bit of sodium nitrite in it. And what happens is, after you've brined it, it's going to turn the meat a little more pink than purple. Where we lose a lot of people who won't eat a medium rare piece of duck okay. is that it looks like liver. They think liver. And what people do is they go to extraordinary lengths to make their ducks not taste like duck.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Soak them in teriyaki, wrap them in jalapeno bacon, cream cheese, and all that. And they taste great. But they don't taste anything like duck anymore.
Yeah, we had this discussion about doves last time you were on the show.
And that's the victory. Let's not make it taste like a duck. But if you brine it, and I cook my duck in parts anyway. I cook legs and thighs very slowly. I cook breasts quickly to rare to medium rare. But if you're going to brine a whole duck, leave it in there for 12 to 24 hours. And the brine needs to be refrigerated. You need to keep it between 34 and 40 degrees so that it doesn't encourage bacteria. And what it will do, you'll look in this bucket of water that you've got in the refrigerator with the duck floating in it, and it's going to be bloody water. Okay. You dump that out, you pat it dry, rub it with olive oil, salt, and pepper, and proceed with your recipe. But, yes, the answer is I brine, and I brine them all.
Brine them all. Ducks, turkeys, whatever you're going to cook.
Upland game. You know, I don't normally brine antler game.
Okay.
I prefer to dry age antler game, but, you know, if you've got something that's especially pronounced in flavor but not spoiled and you want to mellow it out a little bit, a brine will always help.
Okay. Since you brought it up, dry aging, because, you know, a lot of these high-end restaurants talk about dry aged, you know, steaks and that sort of thing. Take us through a dry aging process for venison, say.
Well, in any aging in general. So I had a buddy of mine from Center, Alabama, not too far south of you there. He said, man, I do exactly what you do. I've eaten your stuff. He's traveled with me on business things. And he goes, I've eaten your stuff. So I had a backstrap that from a deer I killed last night. And I'll tell you, it tasted, the flavor was fine, but it was really, really tough. And I shot a deer I live in Northern California. I shot a deer in the Central Coast. That our season opens second weekend in August. It was 100 degrees.
Holy smoke. And we thought we had it bad here.
Oh, that was, 100 degrees is just no time to be shooting deer. No. So, for the TV show, I cut a part of backstrap out, cooked it, looked great. When you see it on TV, you're going to go, man, that looks great. But after I had hung the rest of the animal for a week or so and then dry aged that backstrap for about a week. And for dry aging, what it does do, it's going to let the enzymes do their thing in the meat, and it's going to break down a lot of that connective tissue. If you take a hindquarter roast, for instance, and if you don't age it, if you just slap it on the grill, take your time, bring it to 135, 140 degrees, it's going to be a little tough. If you dry age it for a week or two, what it really does is it tenders it up, and it's going to evaporate a lot of that capillary blood. If you've got things in the freezer that haven't been properly aged, they haven't been hung, a lot of people say, man, I don't need to age it. I take my deer, I eat it the next day, and it tastes just fine. And when I ask them, most of them, they're putting it into a slow cooker or they're grinding it, and so it doesn't really matter. But if you like a steak that's cooked rare to medium rare, or maybe even medium, that dry aging is going to make a difference. And prove it to yourself. Take a deer steak, put it in the refrigerator on a rack with a pan underneath it, leave it in there for 5 or 6 days, and then compare that to one you take right out of the freezer and thaw. You'll find that that dry aged one is a lot more tender.
Gotcha. Now, dry aging needs to be done, what temperatures?
Between 34 and 40.
Okay.
A refrigerator works fine. You know, the problem with dry aging is it's not covered up at all. So it's open. You want whatever's in there to evaporate. Some people will wrap it in cheesecloth, because let's say if in your refrigerator you've got a big pile of onions and garlic and that kind of thing, that will affect the taste of your deer. It can get those flavors. Somebody is sending me a product right now called a dry ager, I think, or dry ager, or steak ager, or something like that. It's a little deal that fits right inside your refrigerator, and it does the aging for you, apparently. I'll let you know if it works.
You do that, because that would be pretty cool if you had something like that.
Oh, yeah.
I'm trying to think. We got about 3 minutes here before that bottom of the hour break. Okay, opinion. Here's somebody just had an opinion. Oysters, steamed in a pot or roasted on a steel slab?
I like to roast them. You know, the oyster roast with the, you know, I'm kind of partial to the, you know, the wet burlap over the top on a bed of coals type of deal.
Right.
And I eat my oysters when I'm in South Carolina where they're plentiful and they don't cost $3 a piece like they do on this side of the country.
Yes.
I know people listening just said $3 for an oyster. And oysters are, I normally eat them raw anyway, because it is by far in my top three favorite foods. And that one of the things I love about South Carolina is your all's oysters. They're delicious, but really I like to steam them, but I prefer to eat them raw. And really, as long as they're not overdone, I'll eat them any way you put them in front of me.
I've had them both ways. Guys, there's just something about that steel plate, throwing them on there with a shovel and then covering it with that burlap.
Yep.
It just does something to it.
Oh, yeah. I agree.
So I think we're about ready for that bottom of the hour break. Real quick. Thought just left me. That's what happens when you get old.
Don't I know it?
And then I bit my tongue when I came on the air today. So it's been a great day altogether. All right. So we're on with Scott Laceth, fixing to go to that bottom hour break with more stuff. And is there anything I can throw at you that you won't know about?
If I don't, I'll either make something up or tell you.
And I won't know the difference. All right, my friend, hang on through the break. We'll be back with more Woods and Water, South Carolina.
Yeah, those were good times that we shared. We thought those nights would never end. Should have seen it coming, running with a falling angel.
And welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. Paul, your bumper music sounds better than mine, just because it runs through the system, I suppose. Well, you've heard a segment with him now, so don't be afraid to call him. It's 877-235-9405. I've got a list of questions here already. So, Scott, we'll just get back to it. Question from a listener.
I'm in.
Is there a trick or something to look for to keep from cooking fish too long on a grill?
Well, you know, the easy way to not overcook it is to undercook it. You can always throw it back on the grill. The standard deal used to be 10 minutes per inch, but you know, that means that's under exact temperatures. Really, the only way to learn how to cook anything properly is, and I always start with a meat thermometer.
Okay.
Whether it's a piece of fish or a duck breast, you can't uncook it. So what I do with a piece of fish is, let's say if it's an inch thick, I'm going to put it a little bit of olive oil, salt, and pepper. I'm going to put it on a grill. After about 3 minutes, I'm going to quarter turn it so it gets that little diamond pattern on it. And I'm going to cook it skin side down first, if there is skin on it, because I want that skin to be crispy.
Okay.
I'm going to flip it over, cook it for another 3 minutes. I'm going to quarter it one more time, and it's done. People need to not worry so much about their fish as they do about the chicken they get from the grocery store. If you cook fish to 160 degrees, it's not very good.
It's
really, really dry. So get a meat thermometer, cook your fish to about 140 degrees in the center, and it'll be nice and moist and delicious. And if you find that your fish is a little fishy, and I know we've talked about this on the show before too, before you cook it, wrap it in 2-ply paper towels and store it in 2-ply paper towels once it's thawed. And you want to wick as much of that moisture out of it as you can so that when you rub it with olive oil, salt, and pepper, put your seasoning or whatever marinade on it, it gets absorbed into the fish, and when you throw it on the grill, it's not your, the flavors that you want to add are not competing with all these funky fish juices.
Which brings up a point. In your saltwater fish, like your dolphin, you know, wahoo, tunas, you got that bloodline. Do you take that bloodline?
Gotta go.
You gotta go before you even think about cooking it.
Absolutely. It's gotta go. It's not gonna serve any purpose. You don't wanna eat it. If you go to a restaurant and somebody serves you a hunk of tuna with a big bloodline in it, I feel like I'm being ripped off. I don't wanna pay for that bloodline. I don't wanna eat the bloodline. There are those people that think it's okay. I mean, and it's kind of, they call it kind of gamey. But I don't want my fish to be gamey.
Okay. But it's okay to be a little fishy.
But, you know, if it's a little fishy, you've done
it's
something
fish.
Wrong. I mean, it's, but I mean, stinky fishy isn't
right.
good.
Yeah.
You shouldn't turn up your nose when you smell the fish. It should smell like the sea if it's a saltwater fish.
All right. Let's see. We'll stay on the fish. Easiest fish to fix. If somebody's going into the Ingles Market or something, or a fresh market or whatever, to buy a piece of fish, what's the easiest fish to, I guess, learn on in this one?
You want to get a firm flesh fish, and where a lot of people are going now is they're going with tilapia.
Mm.
I highly recommend that you don't eat tilapia.
Yes.
Unless it's been raised in the U.S., because most of it comes from Southeast Asia, where they have no controls over the fish that we get here. I mean, we don't know what, it's raised in questionable waters. People go to tilapia now because it's plentiful, it's available, and you can do pretty much anything with it, but it's not one of the desired species if you want a good, safe fish. Salmon is available, Atlantic salmon is available all year long. It's farmed, it's firm. For some people, the salmon's too oily and a little bit too pronounced. So it just kind of depends. I mean, I'm sure you can get some rockfish there, some snapper there.
Yeah.
That's very forgiving. And what you don't want to do is play with it too much when you're cooking it. The easiest thing you can do is to put a salt and pepper, a little butter on top, and throw it in your oven. As soon as the color's out, it's pretty much done. If it's lightly brown, it's pretty much done. But I go by what's in season and what looks good at the grocery store. And what you want to avoid is the lighter, flakier fish like the Dover soles that you're going to end up getting really frustrated because they're going to fall apart on you.
Okay.
So go with something firm. Make sure you get the fish juice out of it and just don't mess with it too much. You'll be fine.
Here's a real nebulous question for you. I guess when to use brandy or wine in cooking?
Whenever I'm in the mood for it and brandy, if I'm going to do brandy, I'm normally doing, I'll do, like a brandy cream sauce. You throw a hunk of deer in a skillet. Just before it's done, I'll put a big splash of brandy in there, some peppercorns and some heavy cream and just a pinch of salt. Take the meat out, maybe throw in some mushrooms with this brandy. We'll call it a brandy mushroom cream sauce.
Okay.
I use wine all the time, but I don't use good wine. I use wine that has neutral flavors. You're going to hear on TV, if you listen to Food Network today, there will be 20 people telling you not to cook with a wine you wouldn't drink. And some people just aren't all that particular about what they drink. For me, I would rather save my money and drink good wine and cook with a very neutral wine. I normally cook with a bottle that we've opened and haven't finished and it's been sitting around for a few days, or a lot of restaurants have an 18-liter box of Burgundy and Chablis with a little spigot on it, and that's what they're making your sauces with. And one of the mistakes that people make when they're cooking with wine is they don't reduce it enough. If you're making a wine sauce, you're going to take 2 or 3 cups of wine and reduce it down to 2 or 3 tablespoons. Then you're going to finish it with some cold butter or a little bit of cream. Otherwise, you're going to have a sauce that's way too thin. Michael David Winery is a sponsor of the TV show. They make 7 Deadly Zins and Earthquake Zinfandel and 6 Cent Syrah. And so I've always got plenty of wine on hand.
Gotcha. Here's a good one. We're fixing to come out of deer season. So this one fits right in because all season long we have been listening to those 200-pound little bushy tails that come through the woods and give all deer hunters heart attacks. What's your best recipe to fix a squirrel?
Well, first of all, my preference is to cook. If it's a young squirrel, I'm just going to part it out and I'm going to dust it and fry it. I mean, a young squirrel is perfect for frying. An older squirrel takes a little bit more work. They're a little tougher. I'm on an older squirrel, I'm going to brown it and braise it, which is what I do with any kind of tough meat, whether it's a deer neck or an old squirrel. Brown it first, throw it into a roasting pan, and you can do this on top of the stove too. You want about an inch of liquid, throw some celery, carrot, onion in there, little herbs if you like, and cover it up tightly and cook it at low temp until it just about falls off the bone. You can also do those in a slow cooker just fine too. But depending on the age of the squirrel, my preference, young squirrel, I'm going to fry. An old squirrel, I'm going to take my time.
That was a good question because, yeah, all of us are coming out of deer season and we're looking at squirrels like, you're next on the list come January.
That's right. I hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah, really. Man, I want to get to that one we talked about yesterday, but I think I'm going to say that last. A wild pig. We're overrun with wild pigs around South Carolina. We got about 3 minutes of that break, so we can flush that break if we're not done with this. What, and you've got a range of pigs. I mean, usually when you see it, you see the whole sounder group, right?
Right.
Which one do you want to shoot? And do you want to get it all in, have the processor make it all in the sausage, or can a pig of whatever size you're going to tell us, can that be chopped up into, you know, loins, roast, pork chops, et cetera?
I'm going to shoot the youngest female out there. I don't want an old boar hog. They don't smell good. They don't taste nearly as good. Really, across the board, the young females of just about any species are going to taste better than an old male.
Okay.
You know, the old male is what is bragging. The young female is what you want to serve it for dinner time. And I don't grind it all into sausage. I like to take, if you take and cube up that hind quarter and brown it, and then go slow with it. It's great for making chili. And I like chili that's more cubed than ground anyway.
Okay.
You can make breakfast patties out of the ground stuff. The loins and tenderloins, you know, there still is a small little trichinosis danger in the wild hogs. I had somebody send me a note on, I think it might have been Facebook or something, saying, man, you talk about going rare to medium rare. Well, I'm going to keep cooking my stuff all the way through. And I go, well, it's yours. Do whatever you want to with it. He says he cooks his pork to 175 degrees and it's still juicy and tender. And it wouldn't be to me.
Okay.
But you want to make sure with the wild hogs that you get to 160 degrees just because of the very, very minute, slim danger of trichinosis, but you don't want trichinosis.
Okay. All right. When we come back, because we're almost to that break time, we're going to talk about, because I got this question, and it's something I thought about too, is breaking down your own deer. In other words, self-processing. There's a lot to it. People want to know, you know, what are your cuts? You know, aging it. Some people do it in a cooler with a bunch of ice and quarters. So when we come back, we're going to dive into that. How's that sound to you?
I'm good.
All right. Well, you're listening to Woods and Water, South Carolina. We've got the sporting chef, Scott Laseth, on with us. If you didn't get your question in, we'll do this again one day soon. So let's take that break, come back on the other side, and we're going to break down a deer in case that's what you want to do, is self-process. Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. We lost him, and I think we're going to get him back here in just a second. Scott, are you with me? I think he's back. Scott, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, glad we got you back. It is something that's a topic of discussion on a lot of deer hunting groups, forums, and that is processing your own deer. I go back and forth. I shoot one or two a year, and it's probably be the easiest thing for me to do my own. On the other hand, it's awfully nice to take it to somebody else and let them do it. So it's a choice thing about your time and all that. Breaking down a do-it-yourself, start us off with, I guess, how long you want it to age before you start doing anything to it, and then take us through the cuts you're going to want, what to do with certain parts of the deer, and the whole process.
Well, obviously, you know, it starts in the field, and I normally remove the tenderloins in the field, the inside. And then a lot of people call that the backstrap, the tenderloin. That's the loin. The loin is the outside. Tenderloin is inside. I have no problem taking those out. They don't really need to age. They're going to be just fine. But I don't start butchering a deer. I hang it. Now, you know, the problem with South Carolina is it can be a little warm during deer season. And you don't want to hang your deer outside if it's over 40, 42 degrees, because that's going to encourage bacteria to rot out your deer, which is bad. So if you don't have a locker, you don't have a place to do it. The one thing you don't want to do is start butchering your deer before the first 24 hours or so, because it's got to go through rigor mortis, and that's when the muscles, they're contracted and stiff. You want to let it go through that. If you eat, it's like the buddy of mine that said, man, this loin I got was just really tough.
Sure.
Well, there was no aging at all on that. And you got to get through rigor. Then the aging process begins. And again, it depends on how old the animal is. I'm going to let it hang for a week or so, because I have access to a walk-in.
Okay.
And I'm going to let mine hang for a week or so. It's the skin's off. And it's going to get a little dry on the outside. I was just reading an article about if the deer fat tastes off, a lot of times it's because you've removed the skin and the fat is exposed to air. And I don't know. I just haven't been a giant fan of deer fat in general anyway.
Okay.
But, so you want to age it. I'm going to hang it for at least 5 to 7 days before I start butchering. And then I'm going to hang it feet side up, hind quarter up, head down. And the first thing I'm going to remove is the shoulders. And we can take, I'm not sure time allows really how to break down and butcher.
Okay.
But what you want to do is start with the shoulders. You kind of work your way up. I like to remove anything that's not muscle. Silver skin, gristle, those kinds of things, unless you're going to cook a whole roast. For instance, with the shoulder, rather than boning out that shoulder and cutting all the little pieces out and grinding it, I prefer to take that whole shoulder and season it and slow cook it. I'm going to brown it and braise it just like I do an old squirrel, but it's going to take about 8 to 10 hours. And at some point, when it's low covered moist heat, you'll be able to pull that shoulder bone out and all this beautiful meat will just fall right off it. And you've dissolved all the fascia, all the silver skin and all the gristle. And it's just good usable meat that you can use for tacos and stews and that kind of thing.
All right.
The back straps themselves, one of the things that annoys me the most about people that process them is they take the back strap and they cut them, they butterfly them into little butterfly chunks. And I've yet to find a good excuse why people do that. I've heard them say, well, they flatten out that way and they cook a lot more evenly, but I'd like to have that whole back strap that I can cut into big chunks. And that way I can butterfly it. I can stuff it with cheese and bacon and who knows what in there if I feel like it. And then tie it all up, cook it as a whole loin, and then cut it into stuffed medallions after it's done. If somebody's gone and butchered your deer and cut them into those little butterfly steaks, you can't do that anymore. It limits very much what you can do with that beautiful piece of meat. The second most tender piece of meat that you're going to have on that animal, now you've cut it into steaks.
Okay.
And part of the aging thing, I know that you've had deer, and I just did a little piece on this. I think I put it on the Winchester blog that not only does it annoy me when people cut their back straps into those butterfly steaks, but they'll hand me a butterfly bag of deer meat, of loin, and it's just floating in this big black bag of deer blood.
Mm-hmm.
It hasn't been bled.
Yes.
That's got to go. Deer blood in general doesn't taste good. At least it doesn't taste good to me.
Okay.
So that's why we hang them. And then once you get it parted out, that's when the aging process begins. If you want it to be really, really tender. Now you can, one of the things, if you overage it, that deer is going to be tender, but it's also going to be more pronounced in flavor. And by pronounced, I don't mean necessarily good.
Okay.
We like our deer to taste more mild than, say, European tastes where they hang everything. You know, they'll hang a pheasant until they'll hang it by the head in the garage until the head's hanging on. It's still tied to a string and the body's fallen off and landed on the floor. And to me, that makes it fairly pronounced in flavor.
Okay.
So what I do after I've hung it for 5-7 days, I'm going to cut a piece of that meat off and I'm going to throw it in the skillet and see how it behaves. And it'll be either a hind quarter muscle or a loin or the back strap. And if it's tough, if it's an older male animal, I'm going to age it longer because it's probably going to be a little tougher. But a lot of times, just that 5 to 7 days of hanging is all you need to do for a younger doe. It tastes just fine.
Okay.
See how it behaves in a skillet, and that'll determine what you're going to do next. If it looks good, smells good, but is really, really tough, I'm going to take those large hunks of meat. And if you don't have room in your refrigerator, you can, with a cooler, create a dry aging box yourself. I use Arctic ice and ice, and the Arctic ice keeps it colder a lot longer.
Okay.
You want to make sure that your deer isn't floating in water. You want it to be above the water and above the ice. It has to be below 40, 42 degrees, and leave it in there for a week. Leave a roast in there for a week, and it's going to be more tender. You can take and age a deer steak for 3 or 4 days, and it should be more tender than the one that you cut off the animal, especially if it's an older male animal.
Wow. What do you want to chunk up into cube steak? What do you want to make, cube steak. What do you want to make out of cube steak? What cut?
You know, I'll use some of the tougher hindquarter muscles. For instance, the eye of round is one that looks like it should be really tender. It looks loin-like, but it isn't. But it's really lean and it's really tough. That's something I'm going to run through a cuber. But what a lot of people do is they'll take, and you know, you've heard this too. They say, man, I took the loins and the tenderloins and I ground everything else into sausage or made jerky out of it or burger.
Guilty.
And I look in their freezers and I'm going, man, what are you going to do with all this deer burger? And if you take those hindquarters, and again, if it's a tough one, that's fine for the cuber. You take the hindquarter, you bone it out. You take a good, sharp, thin-bladed knife, and you remove each muscle. You cut it across the grain, and then if it's really, really tough, there's a little gizmo called a Jacquard, J-A-C-C-A-R-D, tenderizer.
Okay.
Somebody else, Victor, makes one also, and it's got these three rows of flat stainless steel blades that cut across the connective tissue. You do that, you put it in some olive oil, garlic, salt, and pepper, leave it in there overnight, and you're going to have a tender deer steak. We did shows in South Africa in April and May that will air, I think, in January on the Sporting Chef. Every animal that we ate there, all they did was marinate it in olive oil, salt, pepper, garlic, a little bit of soy sauce, some of them did, and then they cooked it over real wood coals. They marinated it for 24 hours, cooked it over real wood coals, until it was about 130 degrees in the center, and the stuff was like butter. My wife, who does not eat a whole lot of wild game, said by far the zebra was her favorite. Now, I know you don't have a lot of zebra in South Carolina.
No.
We don't have them here either.
Okay.
But the same rule applies with that deer. Okay. If you take your backstrap, do the olive oil, garlic, salt, and pepper thing, leave it in there for 24 hours, don't overcook it, you'll have a whole different deer.
Wow. He's got two good cookbooks out there, the Better Venison Cookbook, Wild Game Recipes. He is Scott Laseth, the Sporting Chef. Scott, thank you as always for being available. Man, we hope your ankle heals up. Where are you going to be? I know you did a lot of pre-taping for next year. Where do you have on your travel once you're back up on your feet again?
The first quarter is usually consumer shows. I'll be in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, Salt Lake City, Southern California, which is on fire right now.
Right.
And last year I was on the road 250 days. This year was about 185 or so, and I'm trying to do less every year. I need to stay home and start shooting some more stuff. And by that, I don't mean TV shows.
Yes, yes. Speaking of which, is Cooper Llewellyn Sutter?
Cooper was a Llewellyn up until yesterday.
Oh no.
Cooper has left the building. I have two new pups that are Mac and Floyd. I named Floyd after Floyd the Barber on Andy Griffith. Cooper's 13, and
wow.
Cooper didn't make it to the end of the year. And it was a Llewellyn and a great, great dog. He's 13 years old.
Wow. Well, good. Well, look, take care of yourself. Get well, get back on the road, keep cooking, and we'll do this again soon.
We'll do it, man. Appreciate
it. Thank you, Scott. Yes, sir.
Uh-huh.
Well, I hope you all enjoyed that. I did. I always learn. I'm sitting here. I got a page of notes. Now, if I can just put them together and do something with them. Like I always say, time gets away. New Year's intentions are coming up. Maybe we can all cook our wild game better. And that's another show. Thank you for being here. Thank you for those who sent the questions in. Appreciate it. And I'll be in Anderson at the high school bass class next week. Having a good time with the kids and watching them fish. Learn about fishing. So, as always, get out there. Take the back roads when you can. Don't forget that camera. I'll see you back here with more Woods and Water South Carolina next Saturday.
Line up in my mind.